My grudge with John Fury is he went to a premiere of a movie, a film that I'm in, with Russell Crowe, Ray Winston and Matt Pearce. John Fury showed me no respect that day. And then he's up in front of the world's media saying he'll fight any 58-year-old man on the planet. Well, I'm that man. And I have a reason for I want to fight him, because he called me a fake hard man. I will show him. He's the one that's shying away from the fight. He's the one that's called this fight on, and he's the one that's tried to belittle me.
You're through to Option One Podcast.
Hello and welcome back to the Option One Podcast. Today we are joined by the man, the myth, the legend, Big Joe Egan. How are you?
Great, Theo. Thank you very much. A lovely introduction.
It's all right, mate.
Thank you.
Tell people that don't know who you are, what's it like to be Big Joe Egan? What do you do?
Well, I wasn't always Big Joe Egan. My dad was Big Joe Egan.
Your dad was called Joe as well?
Yeah, I was named after my dad, and he was always Big Joe Egan.
All right.
And then one day, I was about 16. I was on the doors of nightclubs at 15. I left school when I was 14, Theo. I left school with two swimming certificates. I had no real education. My plans in life was to make my fortune with boxing, and I didn't make my fortune with boxing. But I worked the doors. I left school and I worked the doors, and I was 16, and I think, and one of the doormen called to the house.
Yeah.
And my dad answered the door and he said, "Is Big Joe in?" And my dad said, "I'm Big Joe." "No, no, Big Joe." And my dad went, "No, I'm Big Joe." "Oh, no, the other Big Joe." And then it turned out that he was looking for me.
Looking for you.
So my dad said he knew then he'd lost his title. Yeah. But he was always Big Joe in my eyes anyway.
Yeah,
Big Joe. In his prime, he was 6'3", built like a tank. He was a concrete worker. And
wow.
I remember as a kid, we never saw much of him, Theo. We, like a lot of the Irish, Ireland's greatest export has always been its people. Like a lot of the Irish, my dad went away to work in the UK or America.
Yeah.
And we used to get to see him maybe a month or 2 months of the year.
Mm.
But I remember one time I was about 10, me and my two brothers. I'm the eldest of seven.
Yeah.
I got four younger sisters and two younger brothers. And I remember with my two brothers one day, I was probably 10 or 11, and we'd come over to visit my dad in England, and he was stripped to the waist, in a pair of shorts on. And me and my two brothers were saying, "Look at the muscles on Dad."
Really, yeah.
Yeah, because he was a very physical man.
Was he a boxer as well?
He had to go with the boxing. He had to go with the boxing, and West of Ireland man. And he had to go with the boxing. He never went pro or anything, but he was a very tough, hard man, you know, a disciplined man. Heavy drinker.
Yeah.
You know, he's like a lot of the Irish, you know, they love to drink. I'm an Irish man that doesn't drink alcohol.
While we're on that topic, can I ask why? What's like gave you the idea to be this healthy Irishman that doesn't drink? Because I don't know any Irishman that don't drink.
I think being on the doors
for St. Patrick's Day, sorry, what are you?
Glass of milk.
Glass of milk,
yeah,
for
St.
Patrick's Day.
Milk. In Gaelic, it's Banya. On Banya Marsha de Holler.
Right.
The milk, please.
You like milk?
I love milk.
Do you, yeah?
Love a glass
of milk.
What,
you could just drink a glass of milk?
I could drink litres of it.
Really?
I've drank litres of it. Just put the cow on tap. You know, it's a nice drink, and a packet of biscuits as well.
Is it good for building muscle, milk?
I don't know, to say the truth. I've never really had much muscle, to tell you the truth.
I'll say otherwise.
I like a glass of milk.
Yeah.
But when people ask me about, "You having a beer, Joe?" And I say, "I don't drink alcohol." And my dad used to say I was a failure as an Irishman because it's expected of the paddies to drink, you know. And I just never bothered. I had a Guinness when I was 16.
Yeah.
I toasted my 16th birthday with a glass of Guinness with my dad, and I didn't like it. And
really?
I had a cider with my friends when I was 14, and I didn't like it, you know. But my brothers have a drink.
Yeah.
And one of my sisters, I'm aware, one of my sisters has a drink. She's married to, he's retired now, an ex-New York cop, Joe Macatelli. And she'll have a glass of wine and maybe like a her husband.
So when was the last time you had alcohol? Was it years ago?
58 now. So 16. What's that? 42 years ago?
That's some time.
That was at a Guinness at 16 with my dad. So 58 now.
That's the last drop of alcohol you've had?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. No interest in it. I enjoy a glass of milk.
Well, that's it, because it's a bad habit, really, isn't it, at the end of the day? If you want to keep
biscuits
fit,
wouldn't taste good with a beer anyway. I love biscuits
that's it,
too
mate.
Much.
That's it, you've got the priorities. Now, something a lot of people might also know you for, Big John Fury, Big Scary John. What would you say to John Fury if he was sat right next to you right now? If you could look him in the eye and tell him one thing, what would you tell him?
There's something that I want to say to him that's very personal.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, I might as well say it on this because this isn't going out. This isn't going out for 3 or 4 weeks. I'm making a video today.
Okay.
My grudge with John Fury is he went to a premiere of a movie called Prize Fighter, a film that I'm in with Russell Crowe, Ray Winston and Matt Pearce.
Yeah.
Matt Pearce's father, Dave Pearce, was the ex-British heavyweight boxing champion.
Right.
And John went to the premiere, Tyson went to the premiere, it premiered, I believe, before Maverick in Cannes. John was talking to illustrious company, Academy Award winning actors. And one of the illustrious company said to John, there's another boxer in this film called Joe Egan. Do you know Joe? And instead of acknowledging me as his friend, because I'm supposed to be his friend, he went, yeah, I know Joe. Joe's a fraud. Joe's a fake, hard man. I'm no fraud. The only fake thing about me, Theo, is my tan, right? That's the only fake thing about me.
I don't claim
to be a hard man. People say it. I could take beatings, Theo. I've took beatings all my life.
Mm.
As a boy, I got bullied. I got smashed to bits by the bully boys, gangs of them beat me to a pulp.
Yeah.
All my years boxing, I only ever had one tooth knocked out. I got my two front teeth knocked out on the day I made my Holy Communion in Manchester by the bully boys. And when the bullies had finished beating on me, rather than hit my brothers and sisters, I would jump back in and say, don't hit them, hit me more.
Wow.
And I could absorb a beating. And I've absorbed beatings all my life. People think it just happens to you as a child. You know, I've been shot as an adult. I got shot twice as an adult. I've been stabbed many times as an adult. Do you understand? I belt the royalty out of respect. I belt the no man out of fear. I can't do it. I won't do it. I'd rather live crawling on my belly than crawl on my belly. Do you understand? You know, I couldn't. Like,
just looking at you now, Joe, you get quite like, that means a lot to you, doesn't it? I can see.
Well, the thing is, I don't like bullies.
Yeah.
Do you understand? I don't like bullies. And when John Fury was asked if he knew me, and instead of saying, yeah, Joe's my friend, like even now I'm getting angry over
that really
it. Do you understand?
Upset you, didn't
it did
yeah.
upset me
yeah.
because he's meant to be my friend. There's meant to be camaraderie amongst boxers. Boxing, first and foremost, gives you self-respect, Theo, and it gives you respect for your opponent and respect for other people. And that's the most important thing in life, is to have self-respect and respect for others. John Fury showed me no respect that day. Do you understand? And then he's up in front of the world's media saying he'll fight any 58-year-old man on the planet. Well, I'm that man, and I have a reason for I want to fight him. Not because he's thrown out a challenge to any 58-year-old man on the planet, because he called me a fake and a fraud, fake hard man. I will show him how much of a fake hard man I am. He's the one that's shying away from the fight.
Should we talk a little bit about that? So Misfits approached John Fury.
Yes.
And what was his response to that?
No negotiations at all to box Joe Egan. He's gone down the road, excuse me.
Sorry.
He's gone down the road of saying we'd step into his barn and have a bare knuckle fight in his barn. What if he's got the bottle and the courage to even talk like that about fighting me in his barn? Why wouldn't he step into a boxing ring and fight me the honourable way? I wouldn't be afraid of him in his barn anyway. Do you understand? I know I'd be walking out of that barn. Do you understand? I know I'm the man that's walking out. I would best him in the barn or in the boxing ring because he's in the wrong. And you cannot be wrong and strong.
Yeah.
Do you understand? I'm in the right. He's the one that's called this fight on and he's the one that's tried to belittle me.
And there's no money in the barn.
No money in the barn.
No money in the barn.
No money in the barn. Misfits are prepared to put a lot of money on the table. KSI and MAMS are prepared to back me.
Can we just clarify? We're talking millions for those of you watching. We are talking, this is a mega fight. And for him to shy away like this, he's lost a lot of people's respect. And, you know, his reply, I don't think was good at all. He said, there's no written contracts. Because, John, you didn't let them give you an offer. You said no, you shut everything down. So,
point blank, no to fighting me. Now, the thing is, right, I was so angry with him. So angry with him, Theo, because I've had this carrot dangled in front of me. Do you understand? I only ever got £5,000 a fight. Mm. That's what I earned as a fighter, £5,000, my maximum payday, £5,000 a fight.
Yeah.
That's why I became a sparring partner. I earned more as a sparring partner.
Really?
I travelled. Yeah, I earned.
Did
I
you
earned,
earn money for sparring Mike?
I earned a lot of money for sparring Mike.
Wow.
I bought a house when I was 20 years of age, Theo, right? I bought a house outright. My friends hadn't even got a mortgage. I was with Mike from when we were 17 to 19.
Mm.
When I was 20, I bought a house and I was so chuffed to bits. It was only £28,000.
Mm.
I bought it, I put seven into it, stood me 35. I sold that for 54, bought the next one for 50. And I bought and sold a few houses.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Over my time as a sparring partner. Do you understand? I'm getting emotional here now.
It's all right, mate.
Because I'm angry.
Yeah.
I'm so angry with John Fury. Right?
Yeah.
I'm so angry with him. Because this money is dream money. This money is dream money. And for him to excuse me, eyes are watering.
You feel disrespected by the fact that he's...
Well, I just travel down memory lane there now, but getting bullied and my brothers and sisters being bullied, you know. I'm an emotional wreck at the best of times, Theo. Do you understand? I'm an emotional wreck. I cry an awful lot.
It's all right, mate.
And just travel down memory lane there now, getting bullied. Excuse me.
It's all right, honestly, mate. Don't worry about it. It's good to get it out.
He's a thug.
Mm.
That's what he is.
Wow.
Right? He's a thug.
Yeah.
Throwing tables at young YouTubers, right? Bullying people, young YouTubers. I've met young YouTubers.
Yeah.
This is a whole new audience to boxing.
They're just innocent people, aren't they? They're just looking to make a living. They don't want to fight John Fury. He's picking on them because he knows he could beat them in a fight. Whereas, you know, anyone his own size.
He won't beat me in the boxing ring or in his barn. Mm. You understand? But there's no money in his barn.
No, mate.
You understand? You haven't got a bit of tissue by any chance, have you, lads? Because I've been using this handkerchief.
Sorry.
I cry a lot when I talk about my brothers and sisters getting bullied.
I know.
Right.
It's not a... Not a nice
Thank you very much. Dude. Thank you.
You're right. Do you want to carry? Do you want to carry on?
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry. No, mate. Honestly, it's fine.
You know I cry a lot. You've been in interviews with me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but it's good to get it out. At least you're an open book. At the end of the day, you know, people like that authenticity of it.
When I speak about getting bullied, you know, I travel down memory lane, and you ask what it's like being Big Joe.
Mm.
I'm not only pitchy trip at all. I've got a good life.
Yeah.
But I've had a hard life, Theo. I've had a hard, hard life, you know. When I was boxing professional, I worked three jobs. I worked a door in a pub, I worked a door in a nightclub, and I worked in Dublin Airport.
Yeah.
Never had the luxury of a training camp.
Mm.
You know, I'd try and sleep for a few hours, then try and train. And, you know, John would have been the same. John would have worked on a building site and then gone to fight. If there's anything left in the tank at 58... A nice training camp, 14 weeks training camp. I got my camp sorted for Future Ventura with Adam Bailey. He's trained several world champions.
So you've already got all that sorted? You're ready to go?
Ready to go. 3 months. 3 months. I haven't cycled a bike, Theo, for 20 years.
Mm.
But I know I could go out onto the street and cycle a bike. I'm not going to win Tour de France.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't been in a boxing ring since I was 38 years of age, 20 years. But I know my way around the boxing ring. And I know my way around the boxing ring enough to beat John Fury. Mm. I believe that.
Yeah,
he probably believes he could beat me, but if he did believe he could beat me, he'd take the fight, right? So
I agree.
I think he's got an element of doubt in his mind.
Mm.
Do you understand? But like all bullies, when they're confronted, they bottle it.
Yeah,
and I believe that he's bottled it, right? I really do believe it.
In your heart of hearts, can you see it ever happening? If you ask yourself,
I have to believe it's got to happen.
Mm.
Do you understand? I have to believe it's got to happen. You know, Misfits have said they won't give up on it.
Yep.
They'll keep pushing. You know, it's going to get to the stage now where I'm going to have to insult the man. And that's not me.
No.
Do you understand? That's not me.
You kept it very respectful.
I pride myself on my manners. But now the fact that I'm saying one of the reasons why I want to fight him is because he insulted me. It's making me angry.
Yeah.
Right? And when I get angry...
Your pride means a lot to you, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
What you've done and accomplished, and for him to downplay that and call you a fraud is just...
It's wrong, Theo.
It's wrong.
I don't claim to be any hard man.
No.
Never have. Mike Tyson, he battered me for nearly 2 years, made me cry many, many times, hurt me many times.
Yeah.
This particular day, there was four white sparring partners. You knocked three of them out. I was number four. Battered me to a pulp. Never put me down. At the end of the spar, he goes, Joe Egan is the toughest white man on the planet. Far, far from it. I was the toughest white man in the gym that day. What a compliment from a man like Mike Tyson.
Wow.
I took a beating from Lennox Lewis, stayed on my feet, heard the final bell. And for a man like me, just a normal man.
Just yeah, you're
to be able to stand on my feet with the two best heavyweights of my era and not get put down. It's an incredible claim to fame. People say I milk it a lot. I've earned the right to milk it, and I'll milk it to my dying breath. Do you understand that?
Of course,
Mike
of
Tyson
course.
And Lennox Lewis battered me because it was an honour to share the ring with them. And if you're going to get battered, you might as well get battered by the best.
By the best,
I got battered by the best of my era.
It's better than getting battered by nobodies. So.
Well, I think that's what John Fury's afraid of.
Right.
Because I'm not anybody. Do you understand? No, I'm not, Theo.
I think people would disagree.
I was an okay fighter. I was a better sparring partner. I was an okay fighter. I achieved a lot as an amateur. You know, more than what I ever dreamed of achieving. Mm. I dreamed about winning one Irish title. I won 7, which was a major achievement. And I got a bronze medal in the Acropolis Games, which is a world ranking tournament, 21 countries, and I won a bronze medal, which was a major achievement because I was limited ability. I was just tough.
Yeah.
But all fighters that climb into the ring are tough, male and female, because that's something you're born with, courage. You cannot give a person courage or toughness. They've either got it or they go and play golf or they go and play tennis or they go and play basketball or they go and play football. You don't play boxing.
No.
You know, and anybody that walks to the ring, walks to the cage, walks to the mat to fight is born with courage and toughness.
You have to be.
Have to be. And that's what I was born with. John Fury would have been born with the same courage and toughness. Mm. But his conduct is letting the sport down because I believe boxing doesn't just need great fighters, it also needs great ambassadors, and he's not a great ambassador for the sport. As a matter of fact, he's a bad ambassador for the sport.
Mm.
You know,
there you go.
I want to put manners on him.
Yeah, you want to teach him.
I want to put manners on him.
Yeah.
I want to stand over him and say, there you go.
Who's the fake hard man?
Yeah. Right.
I like that. Just shine away from boxing a little bit. What do you think it means to be a man in this day and age? What do you think it takes for someone to be like, yeah, you're a man, you're a good man?
Just, conduct yourself. Like I said earlier on, have self-respect and respect for others.
Yeah.
Carry yourself well. Help others. Plenty of people have helped me in my life.
Mm.
You know, I've had a lot of help in my life lots of times over the years. And it's a nice feeling when people come and help you because then that gives you faith in society.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Because if you look at a box of apples or a box of oranges and there's a rotten apple or a rotten orange in the box, if you leave that rotten apple or rotten orange in the box, it rots the rest.
Mm.
And there's a lot of rot in society at the moment, you know, with what's going on in the world with the stabbings and the shootings and everything else. And it's sad, really.
The stabbings are getting more and more frequent,
it's an epidemic. It's an epidemic. Young children getting stabbed, boys and girls, and they haven't even lived a life. And what people don't understand this, it's the knock-on effect. A mother that's carried her child for 9 months, it's a horrible feeling to lose a sibling. I've no children, but I've had friends that have lost children, you know.
Do you think that's part of the reason why you decided not to have children from the way that society is going now with how
My life hasn't been for kids. I was a professional fighter. I travelled the world as a professional fighter, professional sparring partner. Then I became a bodyguard. I've worked the security industry.
Do you enjoy that? For the people that don't know that you do that.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah? I love it. At this moment in time, I work for two good men. You know, I work for Ali. He has lowest bullion in the jewellery quarter in Birmingham. And John O'Connor, he has Welsh Civils. And they're kind to me.
So
really, like, they mind me more than I mind them. But I've worked for celebrities. I've minded a lot of stars over the years. But as you get older, the unsociable hours of working for the stars, I don't want to do them hours anymore. You know, the early hours of the morning, sometimes 24 hours, 48 hours.
Yeah.
It's a lot of hours as you get older because I like my sleep now.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've deserved it. You've earned it in your life, I'd say, Joe, because you've had a hard life.
My life has been like a roller coaster, Theo. But the thing is, I tell people, if you look at a heart monitor, this is my analogy of life, right?
Okay.
If you look at a heart monitor. When your heart beats, it goes up and it goes down, it goes up and it goes down. And that's peaks and troughs. Same as in life. You'll experience lows and you'll experience highs. I'm not talking drugs. And I think you've got to experience the lows in life to appreciate the highs. And like I said, I'm not talking drugs.
Mm.
When a person flatlines, they're dead. So that's life, peaks and troughs. Every day you get out of bed, there's a challenge in life. It's going to confront you. You know, there will be a day that you won't get out of bed.
Yeah.
Because every day is a gift from God. And that's why each day is called a present.
This is the gift from God. Whether you call him Allah, whether you call him Buddha, whether you call him God, as long as you worship him in the right way, respect yourself and respect others, every day is the gift. That's why it's called a present. One day it will come to the end for me, and one day it'll come to the end for you. I'm not being morbid, but that's life.
I love that.
You know?
I love that analogy.
And that's life.
What would you say to anyone out there who's like struggling with finding what they want to do in life, struggling with battles in their head, struggling with their own mental health? What would you say to someone that needs guidance? Because you seem very wise, Joe.
I've lived a hard life, Theo. I've lived a good life, and I've experienced a lot of my life. You know, I've never took drugs. I don't drink alcohol.
What?
But the thing is, with mental health, I had a depression for 2 years. And when it hit me, I'm not saying that I'm anything special, Theo. I'm nothing special. But when it hit me, I couldn't believe that it hit me.
Yeah.
My boxing career was over. I was a passenger on a coach. I was after winning a good fight.
Mm.
I got 64 stitches after the fight. I got cut across the top of the eye, down the side, across the cheek, across the lip here, across the other. It was a bloodbath of a fight.
Yeah.
But it was a great fight. And I beat Carlton Headley, went on to be the Gladiator Raid, a big powerhouse of a man. It was on a world title bill, Dave Boy McCauley's bill. He fought the American Lewis Curtis. And I thought, if I can win impressively, if they show any other parts of the undercard, I might get shown on American television. So I was trying so hard to win this fight. I did win, but it was a bloodbath. And then I didn't stay in Belfast. I went home to Dublin and I was involved in a bad car crash. Shattered my shoulder, shattered my knee, shattered my jaw.
Right.
And my boxing was finished. And then I went into a depression for 2 years and I couldn't understand what was hitting me. It was like a sucker punch from hell. You know, I was...
Can you describe what sort of... Did anything make you happy during the depression?
Everything I'd ever done. If I cycled a bike, if I walked, if I swam, it was all to benefit boxing. Things that I'd enjoyed, you know, but it was all to benefit boxing. And when my boxing was over, I didn't have any enjoyment in them things. See. And I just went into this downward spiral. And I remember this particular day, I had a beautiful dog, I had a beautiful boxer dog called Sheba.
Mm.
She lived to 14. She had 24 puppies, 13 her first and her 9 survived, 11 her second and her 7 survived. And one of my friends, Jim Rock, I was with Jim the other night. We did a show in Leeds, an Irish night, with Jim won a version of the world title.
Yeah.
We're there with Steve Collins. I fought Steve twice. We all grew up together, you know.
Yeah.
And Jim bought one of my puppies and put it to stud, you know, and then I had one pick of the litter from him.
Mm.
So I had a grandmother and grandson. I called the grandson Solomon. But Sheba went to 14. But I was feeling sorry for myself this day and it spiraled downward slope of depression, and my dog was whinging, crying, and I'm saying, shut up, Sheba, shut up. And then after 2 hours of whinging, crying, I got up and she'd pooed on the floor, and I felt ashamed to think that my dog was in pain and I wouldn't even get her a bed to open the door to let her go out to the toilet. Mm. And I knew then there was something wrong.
Yeah,
I knew my life is in a mess. So I went to Mr. Eastwood. I went down to the gym in Belfast. I hadn't been in the gym in 2 years. I'd piled on the weight because I was still getting wages. I was still being looked after and not minded by my manager. I was living in his accommodation, but I was just eating junk food because my boxing was over and my mind wasn't focused on anything else. And anyway, I went down to the gym and there was gasps when I walked into that gym, when I waddled into that gym because I'd piled on so much weight in 2 years eating junk. And I said to Mr. Eastwood, I said, I need help. I did need help.
You're getting a bit emotional there, Joe.
Yeah, well, you know, you do.
Hard time.
But, but listen, we all need help at some stages of our life. And I went in and I asked for help.
Did you feel embarrassed?
No. Listen, he asked for help.
Yeah.
You know.
If you need it.
He did, he helped me. Mr. Eastwood helped me. He sent me to a health farm.
Mm.
He sent me to Raspberry Hill in Derry. And I went there for 6 or 8 weeks. Got into a different mindset that there was more to life than boxing.
Yeah, yeah.
I lost 22 pounds in weight when I left Raspberry Hill, 6 or 8 weeks. And I focused on other things. I had the safety and the security. But, yeah, I asked for help.
Yeah.
And if anybody out there is suffering, ask for help. Don't suffer in silence. No. Ask for help.
Never going to be alone, for those of you watching. No, there's always going
to
be someone.
Ask for help. I spoke to the chaps earlier on when we came in, and they talked about loneliness. Mm. And people say the boxing ring is the loneliest place in the world. It was never lonely for me because there was always somebody hitting me, Theo. You know, whether it be Mike Tyson or Lennox Lewis or Carl Ryan or Sean Regan. I fought some great fighters. You know, I was always getting hit. Mm. So I was never lonely in the boxing ring. You had a referee in there as well, which you know. But I remember on my 21st birthday, I was telling the lads earlier on, I was living in New York. I was working under an assumed name.
Yeah.
Had my social security number. I was entitled to box, but I wasn't entitled to work on the building site. So I really was an illegal working.
Right.
And I couldn't tell anybody on the building site I was 21 because the name I was working under, the man had a wife and four kids. So I was using his name and his union card. So after work, I sort of moped around Manhattan.
Yeah.
And went back to Brooklyn. I was living in Bay Ridge in Brooklyn. I was living on 89th and 5th in Bay Ridge. Lived above a Greek delicatessen, Tony Castellanonica's delicatessen.
Mm.
And I remember coming up out of the subway on 86th and 4th, 11:30 at night, and I phoned home to Dublin to speak to my family. It was still my birthday. It was still half an hour before midnight.
Yeah.
I was still in my birthday. And I remember my brothers and sisters getting up, screaming and shouting at 4:30 in the morning in Dublin, singing happy birthday to me.
Oh.
And I was crying on 86th and 4th outside the subway station. I was surrounded by 10 million people, but I was lonely. I was on my own. And loneliness is a horrible thing. And that's why you see some of these charitable organisations that offer company for people. It's a very important thing to have that hand of friendship and to give somebody company, especially somebody that's suffering, you know. Friendly hand, a warm gesture, a kind word.
It's making me a bit emotional as well, man. Just thinking about some people do get very lonely.
Don't suffer in silence.
No, that's the important thing. Speak to someone, for anyone out there that's struggling, because there's always going to be someone going through what you're going through, even though it might not feel like it. Let's move on a little bit into a more lighthearted subject. You've met, and you told me this story before, and I want to jog my memory. You've met Wayne Rooney.
Yeah, I know Wayne. Wayne's my friend.
I'm a huge United fan, for those of you that don't know. I could not believe this. And you told me some stories which I think you've got to tell people, man, because people will really like to hear these stories.
Wayne's a great guy. And Colleen, she's lovely, Colleen. I've been out in that company. I've done charity work with a lot of the Man United stars.
Wow.
You know, and when Wayne met Mike Tyson, I brought Wayne.
Did you introduce Wayne to Mike? Or
A man called Phil Yates. He's friends with Wayne and Colleen. And Phil had a restaurant in Manchester called Lounge 10.
Yeah.
And there was a party on. And Ricky Hatton and Wayne were invited to the party. Mike was a guest at the party. So when we went to Lounge 10,
yeah,
I made sure that Mike knew who Wayne was anyway. And he knew who Ricky was. And he explained to them. It was beautiful to see. He explained to them about what was ahead of them, the pitfalls in life as young athletes, because Mike had experienced so many pitfalls as a young, rich athlete. And Ricky and Wayne were them potentially young, rich athletes. And Mike gave them advice. So afterwards, Wayne thanked me and Ricky thanked me for how it went with Mike.
How it went.
And Wayne said, "Joe, please accept my box at a Man United game." He said, "I'll send transport for you." And I brought my wife. She wasn't my wife at the time, Ruth. She's my wife now. And Cass Pennant, who published my book, and my nephew Tom, in the limousine car that Wayne had sent.
He sent a limo?
He sent it was a big one of them long cars, right?
Wow.
So it was like a limo. I don't know. It wasn't the big normal long limo, but it was an extended long wheelbase car. So it was like a limo. We had the beautiful box. It was like a double box for the Man United versus West Ham game, because Cass is a West Ham fan and my nephew's a West Ham fan.
Wow.
I could have filled the box, but I didn't know this. So I only brought Ruth, Cass and my nephew Tom. And Tevez scored the goal to keep West Ham up. And then he ended up going to play for Man United afterwards.
Oh,
so,
yeah, of course. Yeah,
West Ham had Tevez at the time. So Cass was over the moon and my nephew was over the moon. And we had an incredible day. And Wayne gave us that box that day and sent the car to pick us up and bring us home, which was great. And then Ricky, I was talking to Ricky and he knew what Wayne had done for me. So Ricky said to me, he said, Joe, I'm going to bring you out to Vegas.
Ricky Hatton, this is.
Brought me out to Vegas. And I got to carry his belt into the ring when he fought Juan Arango. And he put me and Ruth into Caesar's Palace, right? Because a beautiful suite in Caesar's Palace. And I got to carry Ricky Hatton's belt into the ring when he fought Juan Arango. Wayne Rooney carried it next, and the Oasis brothers carried it next, but I carried it first.
Wow.
And that was just a thank you from both of them. They didn't need to do that for me.
No.
It was just a lovely gesture from both of them. They're both my good friends, you know?
That and is.
Wayne, I believe, now I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
But Wayne's dad used to box and Colin's dad used to box. And I believe somebody told me that they'd actually boxed each other.
Really?
So I was told. I don't know how true it is. I've never asked.
I heard a story of their parents often having fallouts.
Oh, well, that's
yeah,
that's,
yeah. Because apparently there was over boxing or something. That
the McLaughlins are boxing family.
Is that Colin's side?
Colin's, yeah. She's a McLaughlin. And the Rooneys are boxing people. So there I believe Wayne's dad. Somebody told me.
I bet the fights are fun around their ass.
But you know, it's funny you say about dads boxing each other. Buster Douglas, who was the first man to beat Mike Tyson, his dad and Tony TNT Tucker's dad, who was another man to fought Tyson, they actually boxed each other.
Did they?
Yeah, too. Yeah, so it's happened in boxing.
Yeah, but happens, man.
Yeah, but Wayne's a lovely, lovely man.
Is he? Because, Wayne's one of them where it's like he doesn't show his personality much. He was a great footballer back in the day, but being around him, was he just a lovely guy?
Yeah, just a really nice guy. Fun character.
I've got a segment here, Joe, which is very interesting. We've not done this before. Good. I'm going to give you a bunch of phrases and you've got to say the first word that comes to your mind, okay?
Don't embarrass me here now.
No. It's nothing crazy. So, what's the first word that comes to your head? Mike Tyson.
Pain.
Joe Egan.
Never been asked. Look, I've
it's all right, man. Yeah, you take your time. What do you want to be remembered as?
A nice guy.
Nice guy.
That's all I want to be remembered as. People ask me. I just want to be remembered as a nice guy, Theo. That's all. And I pride myself on my manners. Always have, always will.
Yeah.
You know, but that's a sentence, that's not one word.
No, you have to one word that describes
one
you.
One word. Decent.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm a decent guy.
Decent guy. John Fury. One word to describe him. Someone said you can have one word to describe that man. What would you say? Because the obvious that I'd go to, coward?
I don't like to call him that, but it's going that way, Theo. Do you understand? It's going that way. And I hate to call a fighting man a coward. Do you understand? Yeah. It's an insult of the highest order, but it's going that way. You know, I'm trying to think of a word. I'm not the best academically.
It's a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah.
You don't want to diss him, but at the same time...
It's getting that way. It's getting that way, Theo, because he's really making me very angry.
Mm.
You know, because Misfits have tried to negotiate and he's just point blank saying no after saying what he said. You understand?
Yeah.
So I don't want to call him a coward. Fraud?
Fraud?
There you go.
Fair enough. That's
what he said about me.
I'm just echoing
his sentiments about me.
Reversing it around.
Yeah.
Muhammad Ali.
Greatest.
Greatest. I like that.
That's what he used to say. He was the greatest of all time. G-O-A-T. I met him on four occasions. I was at his house in Michigan. Al Capone used to own his house.
What was it like meeting Muhammad Ali?
I used to envy my dad. My dad met him at Steve Collins' fight when Steve Collins fought for the first world title. He fought Reggie Johnson. And my nephew, who's 37 now, would have been probably four at the time. So going back 33 years, I think. And Muhammad Ali was at the event in New York, I think it was. And my brother-in-law, the cop, got my dad good seats. And my dad was looking at Muhammad Ali, and Tom, as a child, maneuvered through the legs of the bodyguards. So my dad tried to pick the child up, his grandson, and Muhammad Ali picked my nephew up and held my nephew in his arms. And my dad had the photograph with my nephew Tom and him with Muhammad Ali. And I used to envy my dad so much for meeting him, because I used to do an Ali shuffle as a tribute. To me, he wasn't just the greatest man to enter a boxing ring. He's one of the greatest men to enter this world. Boxing was blessed and privileged to have him. He could have turned his hand to American football, baseball, basketball. The man was just a supreme athlete. Boxing was, like I said, graced to have his presence in a boxing ring.
I've had a lot of people say
that. Oh, the greatest of all time. And when I went through his gates of his home, G-O-A-T, greatest of all time, excuse me.
Is that what was in his home?
That's on the gate as you go through. Wow. That's what the word GOAT, he called himself the greatest of all time. And to me, he was, you know, he is, like I said.
Like I said, not just in the ring, but
outside the ring. He's been proven, he helped so many people. They highlight the Vietnamese war, the Vietnam War, of his stance against the war that's been proven to be a wrong war anyway, you know. But that's just one thing that he did in his life. You know, he's helped so many people. He helped the Irish. You know, they say his roots came from Ireland. You know, the Irish were trying to claim him. Maybe his roots do come from Ireland. County Clare, they say, you know, that one of the people that left Ireland during the famine ended up in America, and descendants of Muhammad Ali, because he's been over to County Clare and traced his roots. So that's a claim that the Irish have, that somewhere in the bloodline of Muhammad Ali, there's Irish in him.
I love that.
You know, and it's just a, listen, the Irish are great storytellers, you know, and the way the Irish are, we never let the truth get in the way of a good story, you know. So there might be truth in it, there might not.
Yeah.
But I heard it.
Good story.
And I like to believe it.
Especially for the Irish,
yeah.
Boxing.
Yes.
One word to describe it. What does boxing mean to you? What, in one word?
I love it. Love.
Love.
Yeah, I love the sport.
That's funny, because the next one I actually have, love. What does it mean to you? One word. It can be family, it can be friends, it could be anything. What does love mean to Big Joe Egan?
I love my family. So family, I suppose, yeah. Family. But that's the great thing about boxing. Boxing is a great camaraderie in boxing. It is like one big family.
Yeah.
All over the world. You go anywhere in the world, there might not be bouncing a basketball, there might not be kicking a soccer ball, but there'd be a kid punching a bag.
Yeah.
It's the most cosmopolitan sport in the world, you know. And please believe me, I know it's only, if you, one of these days they're going to find life on a planet out there somewhere, and I guarantee you one of them aliens will be punching a bag.
It's one of the first things we'll be doing.
It is a sport that's so cosmopolitan, you know, so it wouldn't surprise me that there'd be aliens punching each other.
You're probably right, you know? You're probably right.
I love the sport so much, you know, and I love the fighters. You know, guys that I've actually boxed, I've still remained friends with them to this day. And people that don't understand the sport, how can you smash each other to bits, batter each other, and embrace each other at the end of a fight, and have a friendship that will stand the test of time? I can't explain it other than respect for each other.
Yeah.
You know, and when you see me and Cathal Ryan, we battered each other in the finals of the Irish Championships. He was their doorman in the nightclub where we worked. And we went to work after the fight, all busted up. People go, oh, it must have been a bad fight tonight. We were after boxing each other, you know, and I was the best man at his wedding. And we're still great friends to this day. So my other real close friend, Steve Dawson, he finished my career first time round, Steve did. That was my last, like I said, I was 38. And me and Steve had boxed many, many times in the sparring together. He was a good light heavyweight. And we worked the doors together. And when I made my comeback after 12 years out of the ring, there was a big write-up in the boxing news. It said George Foreman makes the comeback after 10 years. Big Joe Egan makes the comeback after 12 years. To get mentioned in the same paragraph as George Foreman was incredible.
That is incredible.
Incredible. And then when I made the comeback, I'd come out of prison, Theo, you know, and I was broke. And I didn't want to do another crime. I'd let my family down. I'd embarrass my family. I'd embarrass myself. And
when you say crime, what kind of crime are we talking about?
Well, what had happened in my life, Theo, right? I won't talk bad of her because she's tragically recently died.
Okay.
God rest her. She died at 51 there, only a few weeks ago. But when my boxing career finished, I came to the UK to work and got my head together through Mr. Eastwood, and I realised then that there's more to life than boxing and that. And I came to the UK to work. I came working for a man called Paddy Finn. He was in the pub trade, ex-Irish heavyweight champion. And I came over. I managed his pub, got the licensee for the pub. I did a BII certificate, British Institute of Innkeeping. I'd done two MVQ certificates. Like I said, I'd left school with two swimming certificates. So suddenly now I'm getting a bit of an education.
Yeah.
And I'd done 2 years managing Paddy Finn's pub, and then the opportunity came up to take over a pub in Erlington called the Lyndhurst. It was on a very rough housing estate, but there was good people on the housing estate. And I took the pub with my business partner from doing £1,000 a week to doing £16,000 a week. We were making a good living. We had the big function room. We had boxing tournaments on. Bunny Johnson, the first black British heavyweight champion, he came to the pub, and Richie Woodall, former world champion, and Rob Norton, former world champion, Ernie Shavers, the hardest puncher ever of all time, came to my pub to visit people in the pub. Denzel, out of Only Fools and Horses, Paul Barber, my friend, came to visit me in the pub. And a lot of celebrity friends visit the pub. And we built the trade up. Celebrity friends that I know through the boxing. Anyway, the racketeers wanted protection money. I thought this only happened in movies. It happens in real life.
Is that an actual thing that goes on?
Yeah.
Is it just in cities, or is it across?
Happens all over the place. And
so when you say racketeers, so these are a gang of people who
scum, gangsters, right?
What are they asking you to do?
£500 a week protection money.
Protection money from
them.
Right. Okay.
Like I said earlier on, I bow to royalty out of respect. I bow to no man out of fear.
Mm.
So on the 19th of July, 1998, they put a demand in.
Yeah.
The 26th of July, they attacked the pub. I got shot twice. And it was a bad day. Had headlines in the newspapers. It said the attack on the Lyndhurst pub made the Braveheart film look like a Walt Disney movie. It was a bloodbath. Lucky nobody died, but there was a lot of people wounded. I was one of them. Anyway, I was charged and had to fight a legal battle.
Charged with what?
Attempted murder.
But they attacked myself. You?
Yeah, but all the law is strange the way it worked.
Right.
And then my ex, Lisa, had issues with her over my house in Ireland, and I speak bad of her. And then the brewery were trying to evict me, saying I wasn't a fit and proper person to run that pub. So I was fighting on three fronts, and I ran out of money.
How were you paying for all of that at the time?
I sold everything out of my savings, and I sold what I had. I sold my watch. My mum and dad got me for my 18th birthday, my ring they got me for my 21st. I sold everything I had.
Well, that was hard, though.
Very, very hard. Very, very hard. That's what I say. People think that Joe Egan's life has been a bed of roses. It's been a lot of thorns on the way as well, you know. There's been roses many, many times, but there's been a lot of thorns and a lot of weeds. But it's life, you know. And like I said, I'm not on any pity trip. I've had a good life, and I'm still here. And I'm enjoying every day, like I said earlier on, every day is a gift, it's a present, and I'm enjoying it. But when I ran out of money and I got the opportunity, I'd never been in trouble in my life, Theo, do you understand? I've always been a decent, good person, you know?
Yeah, of course.
Pride myself on who I am and carry my family name and try and do my family proud and my dad proud. That's all I ever wanted to do in life was
that's
do my mum and dad proud.
That's all anyone wants, just to make their parents
that's
proud.
It. So when I got into trouble, Theo, a guy had came into the pub. I was introduced to him, and he asked could he park stolen cars on the car park of the pub. I was at such a low ebb in my life. Now, in life, if you get one bite of an apple, you're doing okay. You know, some people don't get that bite of the apple. I had the bite of the apple with the boxing. It didn't work. So now I'm getting a second bite of the apple in the pub trade. And suddenly the rug has been pulled from underneath me. And it was very, very hard to let that go. Because, like I said, I'm getting a second bite of the apple. I might not get a third bite.
No.
I turned to crime, ashamed of myself. I really am ashamed of myself.
Did you go to prison?
Yeah, I went to prison. And one time that I only ever seen my dad cry was when his daddy died. And I didn't understand. Me and my two brothers, we were very young at the time. And in every boy's eyes, his dad's the toughest man on the planet. In my eyes, my dad was the toughest man on the planet. And I'd watched him coming in the front door and my mum greeting him in the hallway, telling him the news. I didn't know what was going on. I just saw him hold his head in his hands like that and break down crying. And my arms were around one of my brothers and I got such a fright because my dad was crying in front of me. I'd never seen this before, and I got such a fright. Anyway, it turned out that we found out that his daddy had died, God rest him, my granddad.
Mm.
Anyway, wind the clock on years later, when I was found guilty of my crime, and I looked up to the gallery and I saw him holding his head in his hands. And it was like deja vu. It was the same feeling of his daddy dying, me getting sent to prison. And I felt, I'm not going to cry now. I felt sick and ashamed to thinking what I've done has hurt my dad as much. Me getting sent to prison as his daddy dying. And I felt sick.
Mm.
And I thought, it just broke me, And I went down the stairs to the cells and I just felt ashamed of my life. Anyway, when I came out of prison.
How long did you?
I originally got 2.5 years. And then when I was in prison, the Crown Prosecution, the West Midlands Police, who had exposed for corruption, appealed and tried to get me 7 years. And then they got it increased to 4 because I'd upset them. Do you understand? I'd upset them because on the day of that attack, they let me down. You understand? They knew what was happening that day. There was men coming to my pub with guns. They knew the West Midlands Police were well aware.
How long did it
took them 55 minutes to get to me. Police station 600 yards away. Well, 55 minutes,
That's crazy.
It's bad. But the thing is, what doesn't kill us makes us stronger.
Yeah.
And that day, there was a band of brothers, there was friends of mine in the pub. They frequent the pub as ex-boxers, friends. It was a good pub. And they stood with me that day. I might not be here if it wasn't for them.
Really?
You understand? Yeah, I'd have took a couple of the scum that attacked me with me. What could have that been? You understand? So I was blessed and very fortunate that I had some friends there that day, male and female.
Mm.
There was women fighting for the right reasons as well, because what was happening to us was wrong. And we stood our ground. And anyway, when I came out of prison, Theo, I made a comeback into boxing. And
Do you regret that, or are you happy you did it?
To come back into boxing?
Do you regret that? Because I know some people, they come back and they think it's either for the money.
I wasn't for the money that time.
You was?
Yeah. Because I come out of prison and I was broke. And I didn't want to do another crime because I'd done one, got caught, went to prison and felt ashamed. So I thought, I need to get money.
Mm.
And I need to get money very quick.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go cap in hand to anybody. I've never gone cap in hand to anybody in my life.
Mm.
People have helped me, but I've never gone cap in hand. People know when I'm down, they say, look, there you go, Joe, we'll help you up. But I've never asked, I've never gone cap in hand. And I made a comeback. I asked Mike Tyson, I wasn't good enough to be a sparring partner anymore. I've got to fight on one of his undercards. And he said, yeah, Shelley Finkel contacted me. And he said, Joe, we get you one of the undercards. But I said, I'll have a warm-up fight in Ireland to see how I go, if there's anything left. I was 37, gone on 38 years of age. And I boxed, I fought a guy called Mark Williams, who I'd trained with before. I trained with Mark. I got him ready for 2 of his wins.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he had a good win in Ipswich, and he had a good win in London. He fought on David Starry's bill, and he fought on Julius Francis's bill. So I got him ready. Good heavyweight, And cruiserweight come heavyweight. And I'd prepared him for 2 of his fights, helped him years before. So when I got the opportunity to fight, I hadn't fought for 12 years. Mark hadn't fought for 2.5 years.
Was it nerve-wracking getting back in there after all that time? Did you forget that question, Theo, right?
It's funny you ask that question because the fear that the fighter goes through sitting in that dressing room is a strange fear.
We were talking about this before we started. Like, before you make that ring walk, what How do you calm yourself down for one?
Well, I'll tell you, I mentioned his name there a few minutes ago, George Foreman. This is one example of what a person goes through before they fight. George Foreman on a video called Champions Forever with Ken Norton, Larry Holmes, Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier and George Foreman. Five of the greatest, Larry Holmes, Ken Norton, Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, and who were the five champions? Ken Norton, Larry Holmes, Muhammad Ali, George Foreman and Joe Frazier. They're the five champions. Yeah. All talking about their experiences in boxing and life. And George Foreman said, when he was getting ready to fight Ken Norton, he said, I looked across the ring. He said, a Ken in the opposite corner. And he said, he was the finest specimen of a male I've ever seen in my life. He was chiseled, muscles on top of muscles. He said, I walked to the center of the ring. Ken walked to the center of the ring. He said, I eyeballed Ken. Ken eyeballed me. He said, I was so glad that Ken didn't look down because my knees were shaking. And I thought, fair play to you, George. If one of the greatest heavyweight champions of all time can admit he's scared, so can I.
Yeah.
And I was terrified before fights. Mike Tyson says it himself as well. He used to cry in the dressing room before fights because you question yourself, have you trained hard enough?
Yeah.
And then you question yourself, you want to hear the final bell. Of course you want to win, but your pride wants you to win. But the more important thing is that you want to hear that final bell. And there's a song or a poem, and it's stand up and fight, fight like hell. Stand up and fight until you hear that final bell. That's a fighter's pride.
Mm.
You know, you want to hear that final bell. Win, lose or draw. You know, and you want to know that you've given the best you can.
Yeah.
That's all you can do. But when you're sitting in that dressing room, different emotions go through and you get the butterflies. You want to wee-wee all the time. You want to go to the toilet because you just want to go.
I've done it.
You've been there. You've boxed.
Mate, it's one of the scariest yet exciting things you do, because there's this element of like, I might impress all these people around me. They're all here for me.
Yeah.
But then like when you actually step in the ring and you know, you're touching gloves, that was for me the moment where I was like, oh shit, like I'm on my own now. This is real. I'm looking at my coaches, they're good luck, Theo. And that's it. To me, it's a very lonely.
See, if you can walk that walk to get in a fight, Theo, nothing in life will faze you. That is the hardest walk that you will ever have to do in life, right? And I had my first pro fight in Belfast, and I was at the weigh-in. I'm looking around, and there's five or six big guys with tattoos and muscles, and I'm looking around thinking, I hope I'm not fighting him.
Yeah.
And I've gone in to see the doctor, and my heart was racing. My heart's pumping out of me. And the doctor said, are you nervous, Joe? Stevie Wonder could see I was nervous. I was terrified. This is just a weigh-in.
Yeah.
So I said, I'm nervous, doctor, yes. He said, well, I've just examined your opponent, and he's twice as nervous. When I made my comeback.
Are they allowed to say that?
What's that?
Are they allowed to just.
Yeah, the doctor was cool. The doctor was cool. He's Belfast. He's Irish, you know.
Yeah.
So he said, your opponent was twice as nervous. I was so happy and relieved.
Oh, relief, yeah.
But when I made my comeback, I'm in the dressing room, and Darren Corbett, the Commonwealth Cruiserweight Champion, came in. He said, Joe, the guy you're fighting is in the next room screaming, shout, ah! And I start laughing. I've got my hands on the back of the chair and get my hands bandaged.
Screaming as in like
just a mad, it's just a mad, like a warrior scream, like getting ready to go with the battle, right? And I start laughing. It was the back page of the Irish Daily Mirror. Me with my hands over the back of the chair, get my hands bandaged, and I'm looking at Darren and I'm laughing, but it was a nervous, tense laugh.
I was going to say, because it was a nervous, tense laugh.
But 12 years out of the ring, I'd actually forgotten what the fear was like, and I'd fought in the Burlington Hotel. Now, I'd fought in this hotel as an amateur and now fighting in it as a pro, and I've since done a show with Mike Tyson in the same hotel. So next of all, they said, right, let's examine your hands, Joe. So they come in, they check your bandages, then they stamp your hands. They said, right, glove
up, Joe.
Is that
as if to say you've got nothing?
Make sure your knuckles are on your wrap properly and you haven't got anything underneath your bandages, that, you know, just to make sure that it's all done properly to the rules.
Of course.
And next of all, they said, glove up, Joe. So
is that the moment where the heart starts pounding a bit? You can hear the crowd.
I walked out of that dressing room. And as I said, I'd walked out of this dressing room as an amateur. So I knew my way to the boxing ring from that dressing room.
Mm.
I walked into the venue, the big hall, and I walked past the boxing ring. And I was walking out of that building. True as I'm sitting here, I was walking out. And as I'm walking to the exit, two geezers that were sitting went, tapped me, and they went, Joe. And I went, well, they said, you've missed the boxing ring. This was on Irish television. So I have to turn back and walk back to the ring. See, if they hadn't tapped me, I probably would have walked out of that building. My mum only lived 10 minutes from the hotel, and he'd been at my mum's front door knocking on the door. I didn't want to be there, Theo.
No.
Anyway, when I got into the ring, the first two rounds, I wasn't in it. I wasn't there. And I'd sparred well. I'd sparred with Steve Dawson. I'd sparred well. I'd trained hard. I'd got myself in good shape in prison.
Did you win this fight?
Yeah.
The comeback fight?
Yeah. But
you stopped it, didn't you, in the eighth round?
It was a hard win, Theo, because the first two rounds, he was hitting me from every angle. I wasn't there because of
the nerves.
The nerves, emotions, ring rust, everything else. You know, what am I doing? And I was 37, gone on 38, 12 years out of the ring. And I've come back to my corner after the second round, and my corner man, Tony Mann, who was my trainer as an amateur, hit me a slap like I wasn't being hit enough. Wake up! You're getting hammered.
So did you have blood anywhere? Were you bleeding at all?
Theo, to tell you the truth. I know I was getting hurt. So I've gone out for round three, and I got into the fight in round three. And in round four, I was doing a little bit better in round four. And towards the end of round four, I pushed Mark into the corner to try and... He was moving along the ropes, and he was faster than me, and I pushed him into the corner. But as I pushed him into the corner, his shoulder dislocated because I got a lot of strength. And I pushed him into the corner, and his shoulder dislocated, and his arm fell by his side. And I thought, he's wounded here, he's hurt. Because I saw him trying to raise his arm.
And he couldn't.
But he went back to his corner. He still came out for round five with one arm. One arm, he couldn't even raise his...
That says a lot about a man.
Danny Williams done it against Mark Potter in round 10. He was one arm. His shoulder was dislocated and he stopped Mark in the 10th round. But we're warriors. Do you understand? We are modern-day gladiators. And that's what a boxer is, a modern-day gladiator. You're a modern-day gladiator, too. You box, you know what I'm talking about. It doesn't matter what level you box at.
I was going to say, I'm nowhere near the level.
What level you box at. The fact that you glove up and get in and fight an opponent, you're a warrior. You're born with a courage that you cannot teach somebody. You're born with that courage. You can teach people skills, but you cannot teach them courage, right? And Mark came out for round five with one arm. He couldn't even raise his other arm, and he was trying to fight. The fight was stopped. It wasn't the best of the ways to win.
A win's a win.
Anyway, I said to Brendan Ingle, who was in attendance, he trained Nassim Hammer, trained some great champions, Johnny Nelson. He's trained loads of great champions. And how did I look? Because Brendan's from the same town as me. His brother John was our lifeguard and our swimmer bats in Ringsend. And he said, you looked okay. A bit slow in your first two rounds, but you looked all right. A bit left, Joe. My old trainer, a few other people that were there. So then I contacted Mike and Shelley and I said, look, I boxed in Ireland. The Irish would tell me the truth. If there was nothing left, they'd say, look, you're rubbish. Give it up. Right? Nothing left. But they said, I've got a little bit left.
Yeah.
So then I went training with Steve, as I'd done many, many times before. I ducked into a punch and he ripped my eye wide open. Had headgear on, big gloves, and he ripped my eye wide open. And I felt the blood running down my face and I knew then it was over. I was 38 years of age at that stage.
And so you never got to box on the undercard?
Never got to box on the undercard. I went to see Mike fight when he fought Julius Francis and I saw him when he fought Savary, so I would have been on one of them. But the thing is, it didn't happen. But now, 20 years on, from 38, now 58... I got a bit of a goal now in the John Fury thing.
It's give you a bit of a passion again. It ignited something inside you.
Yeah. We all need a challenge.
Do you think it's better to be loved or feared?
Or loved.
Loved.
I don't want to be feared.
You don't want to be feared?
No. No way. No way do I want to be feared.
This is coming from someone that's played baddies in movies. This is someone that, you know, is feared. I'd say if someone saw you in the street, they'd be quite intimidated by how big you are. You're quite a scary guy, to be fair. You're lovely when you get to know you, but like, you'd rather be loved. You don't care about being feared.
Oh, I don't want people to fear me. No chance. Even my opponents that I boxed, I didn't want them to fear me. Respect me. Yes. Respect me enough to train hard to fight me.
Yeah.
Yes. But don't fear me. You know, as I said, some of them were my friends. I boxed many of my friends over time, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't want people to fear me.
Who do you look up to the most in life?
Oh, my dad.
Your dad.
Oh, my God, yeah. Worship the ground he stood on. And my mum. It's all I ever wanted to do was to do them proud. I think my boxing done my dad proud, and I think my acting done my mum proud. You know, she used to see me getting killed in the field.
I was
going
to say,
time.
Must be nice for her to see you doing something else.
Yeah, well, yeah. Tragically, I lost them both in 2022.
Sorry to hear that.
No, it's like I said earlier on, it's the only sure thing in life, sadly, is death. Tragic. It was a bad year, 2022. My dad went on the 24th of April, his 85th birthday, and my mum went on the 28th of December. So 2022 was a bad year for me.
Yeah.
But we go on and we soldier on, and I treasure the memories. Every day I think of them.
Yeah, that's the best thing to do. Do you find it hard to trust people?
Yeah.
You do, don't you?
Yeah. I've been let down so many times. Been let down by family.
Really?
Sometimes, yeah, I've been let down by family. Sometimes people in life say to me, you'll not believe what so-and-so done. I say, listen, I've been let down by so many people. I was let down by the Irish Boxing Association, let me down. The West Midlands Police have let me down. Mm. You know, two proper organisations.
Yeah,
so what chance?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what chance have you got with everyday folk when the Irish Boxing Association, the governing body, you know, a world governing body. You know, they're sitting on the Olympic committees. You know, and everything else, and they took liberties with me.
Mm.
You know, 84, they said I was too young for the 84 Olympics. I accepted that. In the 88 Olympics, I was fighting well in 88. I beat Seldon. He went on to win the world heavyweight title. I'd given a good account of myself against Lennox Lewis. I'd won a bronze medal in the Acropolis Games in 87. I'd beat the Polish heavyweight number four in the world. I'd beaten a European silver medalist. You know, I was fighting well.
Mm.
And they said, no, we're not sending you to the 88 Olympics because you've been training with the pros in America and you've been getting paid.
What?
I said, well, I'm sparring. I'm a sparring partner. Yeah, but you're getting paid. You're a professional athlete. I said, rubbish, you know. And if you look now, they're all getting money.
Yeah.
All the athletes are getting money. You know, the amateur status at the Olympics is gone, really. Because when you can put in, and for me, I think it's crazy, when you can put in, you know, Wimbledon tennis champions to compete in the Olympics, NBA basketball stars to compete in the Olympics, professional boxers to compete in the Olympics, you think to yourself, where's the amateur status gone? But they told me in 88, because I was getting paid in America, that I couldn't go. And they let me down. So I've been let down by a lot of people in my life.
Do you find it hard to trust people?
It hurts. People think because you're boxed and you've got the reputation as a tough guy that you don't feel pain. I'm not immune to pain.
Mm.
I'm not immune to pain in any shape or form.
No.
You know, and emotional pain. See, emotional pain, that hurts more than physical pain. Because, see, physical pain, you get a broken nose or a broken jaw or a busted eye socket or a broken arm, the doctors will tell you more or less to the day when that will heal.
Mm.
See, when you get emotional pain, there's no time tariff to tell you when that emotional pain.
You have to kind of heal yourself in a way, don't you?
Might never heal. Mm. You know, I've never gotten over not going to the Olympics. I've always looked at the opening ceremonies and thought, that could have been me. I could have walked in to the opening ceremony of the Olympics. I'm not saying I would have won a medal.
No, but you'd like to give it a go.
I would have likened to walk into them opening ceremonies because to me, that is one of the most spectacular events in sports, is the opening ceremony of the Olympics. To watch the colours of all the flags, to watch the smiles on the athletes' faces, the joy, the fun. And I wanted to be part of that. I carried the flag in the Acropolis Games, 21 countries competing in the Acropolis Games, and it was a wonderful feeling to carry my tricolour, my national flag in to the stadium, 21 countries competing.
Mm.
But imagine walking into the Olympics. I'm not saying I would have been the team captain or anything like that, but I would have been part of the team. And they deprived me of that. I'd earned the right. I was 7 times Irish champion. I was champion in 87. I was champion in 88 Olympic year, you know.
When you're champion of something, what does it feel like in your everyday life? Do you feel a sense of like, I could beat, like, did you walk into a room and be like, I could beat every single person in this room right now? Did you have that
every
sense?
Every fighter thinks that anyway. Yeah. Every fighter, you will think that when you are going in, you can't go in and think, I'm going to lose today. You know, even when I was fighting Lennox Lewis, right? Mm. I hadn't got a chance.
No.
I had not got a chance. That man had every natural attribute
going.
His height, his reach, his speed, his power was better than mine.
Mm.
He was better than me in every way, shape and form.
Yeah.
What I was hoping for, that he'd have a very, very, very bad day, that particular day when we fought.
And did he?
No. He battered me. He didn't, but
you can wish, yeah.
He beat the living daylights out of me. But you get in there and you think, if he has a bad day and I have an exceptionally good day, I've got a chance.
Here's something.
But you don't get in there thinking, I'm going to lose today.
Who would you rather fight tomorrow, Lennox Lewis or Mike Tyson?
Oh, Lennox Lewis.
You would?
Yeah, because he didn't hurt me as much as Mike.
Okay.
Mike hurt me a lot more than Lennox did.
What did his punches feel like? Was it, because I've been hit, it's like a numbness for me is what I describe hard hitters as. Like, you don't feel it as much. Part of the adrenaline.
You're lucky if you get that numbness, because then you don't feel the pain as much. You know, I've been numbed by Lennox and I've been numbed by Mike. So it takes a bit of away the pain. But people ask me, how bad did Mike Tyson hurt me? He made me cry many times.
Actually, like, physically cry?
Oh, busted me up. But the thing is, see, if Mike Tyson missed you with a punch, you'd get pneumonia from the draft. His power was incredibly speedy, you know. But I was fortunate because I wasn't that tall for heavyweight.
Right.
The uppercut that Mike used to throw.
Yeah, I wouldn't fancy that.
Lift men off the ground, I've seen it.
Yeah.
So I seen him lift 6'5", 6'6" men off the ground. So that extra 4 or 5 inch momentum of lifting, the power, the speed, the thighs, the hips, the movement that he had, incredible speed, ferocity. Every punch he threw was with bad intentions. He wanted to hurt you with every punch.
If you had one message to give to the world, what would it be?
Be nice to each other. That's it, you know. Respect yourself and respect others. Be nice.
Mm.
It's so important, you know. Muhammad Ali used to ask people to be nice to each other. Mm. You know, one of his favourite sayings was, he said, I wish people loved each other as much as they loved him.
Mm.
You know, because the world loved him.
He was adored.
Oh, yeah. All over the world. He was adored, loved, idolised. You know, I know the affection I had for the man and the world had for the man. You know, when he died, heaven gained. You know, they gained something very, very special, one of the greatest human beings ever to enter this planet. And he used to ask people to love each other, you know, as much as they loved him. And that's what I say to people, be nice. Cost nothing. Be nice to each other.
Need more kindness in the world.
Yeah, it's so important.
I think you've been an absolutely amazing guest, Jarrad. The amount of stories that you've got, you could go on for hours, couldn't you?
Yeah, it's been great talking to you. I travel down memory lane.
Yeah.
You know, travel down memory lane. I'm a bit of an emotional roller coaster.
You're an open book, though, which is what people like about you.
I just tell it as it is.
You say it as it is.
Yeah, say it as it is.
No front. But yeah.
I cry a lot, you know.
But it's a good thing, though. You know, there's nothing weak about an emotional man, like you've said to me. You know, it shows strength to cry and stuff like that. So you've definitely taught me that. But everybody watching, hope you've taken something away from this podcast, whether it be strength, whether it be ideas, whether it's just to learn about the man himself. But go follow Joe on all of his social medias. Get at John Fury. We all know that needs to happen. We don't want to see him fight Karl Froch. We don't want to see him fight Mike Tyson. And it won't happen.
Can't happen.
We've spoke to... Can't happen.
The fight with me can happen.
It can happen.
That's the sad thing about it. It's a fight there for him to take. The realms of the imagination of Tyson, Mike Tyson, and Karl Froch, that's the realms of his imagination. Reality is, he can fight me. And in reality, he could beat me. I don't think he can. But in reality, he's got a chance of beating me. He has no chance in beating Mike Tyson if the fight was to ever happen.
Nope.
And he'd no chance in beating Karl Froch if the fight was ever to happen.
Nope.
He would be embarrassed. He would be battered by one of the greatest heavyweight champions of all time. And one of Britain's finest, greatest super middleweight champions of the world.
Mm.
They would beat him to a pulp and he would have embarrassment and shame, right? Because he hasn't got a fighting chance. And all we ask for in life, Theo, is a fighting chance. That's all we ask for. He has a fighting chance against me because neither of us were any good. We're just two tough men.
Yeah.
Do you understand? And we will get into that ring and we'll hit each other as hard as we possibly can. And whichever chin fails first is the loser.
Mm.
I believe his chin will fail first. He believes my chin will fail first. Well, get in and prove it.
Yeah.
You talk the talk, now walk the walk.
That's the thing. The offer's there for this fight. You know, he's not got to call out Mike again. The offer is literally in front of him. Misfits have gone to him and said, look, it's here. Do you want it? And he's basically declined, not even respectfully. And then he's gone and lied about you about on this video. So I've no sympathy for the man. He's lost a lot of respect. But Joe, you've been an amazing guest. And we'll get people to, you know, follow you. We'll get people to get
push this fight
you.
Deal. That's all I'm asking people to do. Push John Fury into a corner where they say a man is at his most dangerous anyway when he's cornered, like a cornered rat.
Mm-hmm.
So push him into the corner. And if he feels that he's dangerous enough, come out and box.
That's
not
it.
Go into his barn. We go to the barn and fight for no money. But I know I'd walk out of that barn anyway, but I wouldn't earn a penny.
Yeah. There's a payday here that he'll never, you know, see again. And it wouldn't be from his sons. It wouldn't be from anyone else but him. He'd have earned this if he fights you, which is what you've said to me as well. But yeah, you can look at it whichever way you want to look at it. John, if you're watching, Joe's waiting and he's ready. He's ready to face you.
I want this fight, John Fury. I want this fight more than any fight I've ever wanted in my life. You know, Misfits, MAMS, KSI, they're backing me. They're trying to negotiate terms with you. Young Theo here has helped so much with everything. I can't thank you enough, Theo.
Yes, mate, honestly.
You know, and he is trying to make this fight happen as well. So people say there's so many people around the world that want to see the fight.
100%.
It's incredible millions, to think that me and John Fury have created so much excitement. I know he's the heavyweight champion of the world's dad. So it's his name that's doing it.
Mm.
But it's me standing up to his challenge that also is helping the cause. 100%. So come on, John, let's get it on.
Thank you guys for watching. Make sure to follow us on all of our social media. And yeah, give Joe a follow as well. But thank you for watching.
Thank you very much.
We'll see you next time.
Theo, thank you, young man.
No worries, Joe.